Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889. From WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. One of Louisiana's educational treasures is the New Orleans Center for the Creative Arts. Established in 1973 as an art school for high school students, the program, which originally included training in music, dance, theater, and creative writing, can now boast of a culinary arts program, totally unique in the entire United States. Chef Emeril Lagasse was instrumental in establishing the program. His foundation continues funding support, while Emeril himself plays a hands-on role in the students' four-year education there. He's assembled a world-class team to ensure the students an experience that prepares teenagers to immediately enter the hospitality industry upon graduation, or gain admittance, often with semesters of credit, in college culinary programs. While Emeril can only visit the campus several times a year, Chef Dana Tui is there every day, guiding and mentoring the chefs of tomorrow. We'll visit Noka's teaching kitchen with Chef Dana, and then enjoy a sojourn in the Press Street Gardens with Marguerite Green, who oversees Noka's urban farms, both on the campus and across the city. Finally, we'll see how it all comes together on the plate at the Press Street Station, where Chef James Cullen operates a full-time restaurant operation with help from Noka students and alums. Get ready for an ultimate culinary educational experience on this week's Louisiana Eats. Since the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts opened its doors in 1973, promising young talent from across the region found a place for intensive training in a variety of artistic disciplines. Among Noka's impressive list of alums, you'll find world-class musicians like the Marsalis brothers, Winton, Branford, and Delfio, and Harry Connick Jr. Other notable graduates include writer Lolas Eric Eli, poet Kim Soo-Nee, actor Wendell Pierce, and me. But it wasn't until recently that a new discipline was added to the Institute's curriculum, culinary arts. This addition was due in no small part to Chef Emeril Lagasse, who, like many of Noka's graduates, is today a household name.
I'm Emeril Lagasse, chef and restaurateur.
For the behind-the-scenes story of how the program got its start, we met Emeril at Press Street Station on Noka's campus.
It's a pretty interesting story, actually, because I've been now here in New Orleans for over 30 years. And, of course, being a musician and being into arts, I had been, since they were uptown, sort of a fan watching Noka and seeing people like the Marsalis brothers that came out of that program, as well as what I think a lot of people don't realize is that they also have a really serious production program as well, producing theater, producing events, etc. So I always wondered why they didn't have, in such an amazing food town in the world as New Orleans is, a culinary arts program. That always stuck with me and stuck in the back of my head. So I got involved with the folks with a dream to begin a culinary arts program in this great school called Noka.
Did you have any trouble convincing the powers that be at Noka that culinary arts deserved its place here with dance and theater and the rest of the arts?
It just was a matter of timing. The people running the program was great timing, and it was great timing for the Emeril Lagasse Foundation as well. We'll soon be 14 years old that my wife and I started Alden. The foundation's about inspiring children, to mentor children, to maybe where you're not coming from such a great place. We first started by really sort of funding and sponsoring a summer program with maybe a dozen students to really sort of try it out as sort of a pilot. That program was so successful, I went to my alma mater, Johnson & Wales. They wrote the curriculum, which on a college level converted it to a high school level. That led to a second year, sort of a trial and error that we were learning the curriculum, teaching facilities, etc. The other interesting thing you talk about faith is that it just so happened to be the time where my chef in Las Vegas, someone who's worked with me for over 20 years, wanted to move back to New Orleans where she grew up. It just so happened that her newly husband, it was also from New Orleans, who worked for me in the front of the house as a general manager, they wanted to move back to New Orleans. And so it was perfect because Dana became the chef instructor of the program. So it couldn't have been a better connection for all involved. More importantly, a better connection for the students.
That's kismet. That's true kismet, isn't
yeah.
it?
I believe that if you think big, you can be big. If you think small, you will remain small. And so we had big dreams of buying this facility and really turning it upside down into a major culinary program on a high school level. It's very successful, very proud.
It's fascinating because that first kitchen was remarkable. That first teaching kitchen was state-of-the-art, breathtaking. Explain to us how you've topped what you started with.
Well, this facility now has a dining room, as we're sitting in. State-of-the-art kitchen, obviously. Pastry area, garde-manger area, a butcher shop to learn about fabricating meats and fish. And another great instructor joined the team. And it's an amazing learning opportunity for the students because both front and back of the house have to work together. It's the same student that's just being melded together. We're now getting even more success with really flushing students out, sending them to culinary schools like Johnson & Wales, like the Culinary Institute of America. And people do not hesitate when they say that they are an NOCA student. They have to say no more because they know that their grades are going to be great and they know that their work ethic is going to be great and they know that their kitchen skills are going to be great. I had an interesting young man who is in Italy right now, externing. And to see this young man be unfortunately involved with drugs and being on a stoop here in New Orleans talking about where his life's going to go, to entering our program and being educated and now traveling, being more educated, he's turned into a fine young man as a representation of not only the foundation, but more importantly, NOCA, New Orleans. That's a good thing.
So this gives you a really clear example, I believe, of how, you know, we can boast about the kids who graduate and make it to the CIA and make it to Johnson & Wales. But if you make it through the program here, the truth is you can make it anywhere.
Well, you can make it anywhere, and you'll be prepared to go into the workforce and be mentally and physically prepared, as well as having a really good understanding of basic knowledge of cooking. And that's the thing about, you know, cooking. When you can understand the culture, it makes you understand the people. And when you can understand the culture and the people, then you can understand the food. And that's how I live, and I live by that. in the future, we can produce better cooks, better chefs, and better people.
You have so many accomplishments. You've won so many awards. You've done such incredibly good work in so many different ways. What do you want to be remembered for the most?
Well, probably changing the outlook of what American cuisine was and is and where it's going, but also the effect on providing education for a lot of young people. And I only say that because I have so many people. I just had a young lady come up to me in Las Vegas this past Thursday where I was doing a dinner with some other chefs, and she wrote me this note, and she was one of the line cooks working with us for this event at the Venetian Hotel. Very elegant, extravagant event. And she wrote me a note saying, "Dear Chef Emeril, I was 4 years old when I started watching you on TV. And now my dream has come true. I'm working for you."
Doesn't get any better than that. Emeril, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. We should do this again at some point, because Emeril's is, we just made 23 years old. And like I need to do another restaurant.
Like a hole in the head.
Like a hole in the head.
I hear a rumor that's happening.
I'm doing it all over again, two blocks away. I have three very successful restaurants. I'm blessed here in the city. But I think I got another one in me. You know, it's going to be called Meryl, which is named after my little girl. And it's just food that her and I enjoy to eat together. Yeah. Because that's what it is. When it's all said and done, that's the bottom line, is that we really want to eat together and break bread.
Chef Emeril Lagasse of the Emeril Lagasse Foundation. When we come back from a short break, we're going on campus to experience firsthand the culinary program at the New Orleans Center for the Creative Arts. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's.
I'm Sally Perry. I'm the Executive Director of the NOCA Institute.
As Executive Director of the NOCA Institute, Sally Perry has keen insight into the conservatory's culinary program and the relationship between its students, their mentors, and the community. We join Sally in her campus office to learn more.
Well, you know, back when it was just really kind of a dream, and I do give all of the inspiration to Emeril and his foundation, because he really felt that if he could do for culinary arts at NOCA what NOCA had already done for visual arts and music and jazz, then that would have been that would be a great accomplishment of his. There are so many great after-school programs that meet underserved students and adults. But that's not what this program is about. This program is about taking those young artists, just like our other performing artists and creative writers and painters, and giving them a world-class conservatory environment and really it just creates the next generation of culinarians. And what it has obviously done for the NOCA Institute as NOCA's nonprofit community partner is food brings many, many more people to the table, pardon the pun, than would typically come for a Shakespeare production or a visual arts gallery opening or a reading of poetry and creative writing. And we have many, many fans who come for those things. But just being able to introduce food to the community and food that's dreamed up by and created by young students who really have nothing to lose. It's a great way to bring new people in to really see what NOCA is all about.
When you talk to people across the country about NOCA and the culinary program, do you find them often surprised that you all are doing this? Because you find a lot of performing arts schools now, but not culinary. How unique is that?
I think the level of program that has been developed here is extremely unique. I think that you only would find comparable programs in post-secondary or colleges. And in fact, when we were doing the research and development and talking with Johnson & Wales, who was the primary author of the initial curriculum, one of the most exciting things we realized is that our students who finished would be able to probably test out of up to 2 years, 2.5 years of culinary school training, which is very expensive, as you know. And just that in itself gives our students a leg up. I'm pretty sure I'll go out on a limb. I'll say that there really is no program like this one at the high school level anywhere in this country that I'm aware of.
Tell us a little bit about how NOCA fits into the neighborhood here and how the neighborhood reacts to and works with you all.
Obviously, in the restaurant, those that are involved with Press Street Station, our cafe that is here, they have the ability to actually talk to a wide variety of neighbors, tourists, and people from neighborhoods all over the region come in to eat. They've performed at senior citizen homes. They work with the neighborhood associations. I've heard from the neighbors that live here just say the fact that we have these young people walking on our streets improves their quality of life and just makes their neighborhood so much more vibrant. You know, when we acquired this property down Press Street, we had acquired it right after Hurricane Katrina and kind of land banking it to anticipate NOCA's expansion. They didn't have a culinary program then. They were talking about it. They didn't have a full academic program. So we knew we needed to buy up some land before the prices got out of our price range, and we did that. And then once NOCA determined there were parts of this land they didn't need for their academic or their arts programs, then the Institute decided this is a great way for us to diversify our revenue streams, very closely aligned with our mission. When culinary became a department, which was 4 years ago, we're in the fifth year, I mean, that is the most obvious and quick way to connect with community and neighborhood by having a space and a cafe that people can walk in and experience a little bit of what NOCA was about, with the videos and performances going on the screen, with the marketplace items that are for sale, with students from all disciplines who are actually front of house and serving tables, to alumni students who are baking in the back and also working the line in the back. You come in and you just get that little taste of what NOCA is about without having to take them on an official tour into the classroom.
Sally, looking in your crystal ball, what's coming next for NOCA and for the NOCA Culinary Institute? What's on your wish list? What's coming?
Our vision is all of our public-facing activities that we've developed with the gardens and the cafe and the art gallery is to eventually they will be all be NOCA alums running and managing and leading on these. Because what better person to come back and run our restaurant or our garden or our art gallery than an alumni who really knows what NOCA is all about and can speak to it. And in fact, our gallery manager is a NOCA alum. Our dream, and we did kind of a pilot program when we first moved into the Riverfront campus, is to have an adult NOCA, to have, whether it's alumni or current faculty, we tried it in the Riverfront campus for the first couple of summers, and it was very successful. We had grown-ups coming to take a poetry class, to take a Photoshop class, to take a ceramics class. They took voice lessons. They took piano lessons. They did improv. We had real estate agents come and take improv. You know, everyone in sales, it's great to be good at improvisation. And then to take cooking lessons. We've done a little bit of it, bits and pieces throughout the past, but it would be wonderful to have a space dedicated to that. Invariably, every person that comes through, takes a tour, interacts with our students, they say two things. The first is, I wish I'd gone to a high school like this. And the second was, do you have classes for grown-ups?
Well, I want to thank you so much for telling us such an interesting story, and congratulations on your continued success here.
Thanks so much for having all of us on your show today, and we're very proud of you, Poppy. We really are. You need to come back more often.
Sally Perry, Executive Director of the NOCA Institute.
After hearing so much about the program, it was time to see it in action. We walked over to NOCA's teaching kitchen, where Dana Tuohy, Culinary Department Chair, was waiting for us.
We are now in the Forum, the Chevron Forum, which is the second building for the NOCA campus. And what we have over here in the Emeril Lagasse Foundation Culinary Studio is a main kitchen with four suites where we're able to mimic what it's like to be in a restaurant with a cold prep side and a hot production side with all these prep tables down the center. In addition to this main kitchen, we also have a bake shop and we have a butcher shop. So we're able to section out and do some specialization. As they increase in the levels, we can do smaller groups, lots of hands-on special with guest chefs, mentors. We're just a lot more versatile over here. So Chef Emeril's vision and his brainchild was to have a culinary school that could train the future chefs of New Orleans, the future chefs of America and the world. His feeling about education and promoting the opportunity for youth was the foundation for it.
And how long has this program been in place?
We're in our fifth year. We have seen as many as 50 to 60 applicants per year. We take as many as we feel will work together as a good team. So we're not only taking individuals, we're taking a team to carry them through those 4 years. This incoming class, we have 7 joining us. So there's nothing written in stone about how many that might be. 1 year we took 10, 1 year we took 12. Incoming is 7.
How does a student get into the culinary program here for starters?
We have a fairly intensive audition process where after an audition information session in which we do a little bit of teaching, a little bit of information delivery, let them understand what we're about, how we go about things, how much are they going to do in their own work and their research. Then they come in, they take a math test because we know cooking is about fractions and conversions. We do a lot of hands-on work with product identification, and that is more about, are they interested and available to something new? Rather than do they know it? Because if they know everything, they don't need to be here, right? We're here to teach them a few things. We talk about cooking techniques and we talk about leading sauces. There's many, many things that they are tested on, their knowledge base. And then we do a one-on-one interview and they have to basically prove to us through their passion and their previous work, how much does this mean to them?
When a student does the four-year program here, what do they end up with?
Other than a high school diploma, which they can get either here at NOCA through the Academic Studio or Ascending School, they will have a extreme leg up into the workplace. They can walk into the workplace and get a job and progress very, very quickly. They are put into a position where they can test out of a lot of post-secondary schooling if they choose to continue in culinary. They can also hopefully test out of some business applications if they're maybe going into hotel restaurant administration or any sort of restaurant business applications.
So here we are on a Wednesday. What's going on in the kitchen here? What would an average day for a culinary student be like?
I don't think there is an average day here.
I guess that's like asking for a chef's average day.
Exactly. Yeah. But today we are in this class, which is a combination of our level twos and threes this year. We are just entering our phase of studying Japanese cuisine because we're traveling the world through food. So we're studying all the international foods right now. So we just started, and today they're doing a soy and balsamic glazed baked chicken. And they are doing some prep on ponzu, and it looks like they're doing some prep with some udon noodles. Oh, we're also working on a Japanese curry. Yeah, I'm very excited about that. What are y'all working on?
We are working on caramelizing onions for the Japanese curry. I'm Maddie Burke. I'm a level 3 culinary student at NOCA.
You don't get your academic work here. You go elsewhere to school, yes?
Right. So they like call it partner school. So I spend the first half of the day at Sacred Heart, and then I come here at 12:45. I leave there for class.
Your classmates at Sacred Heart, are they surprised by how you're spending your afternoons?
They love it, because that means that like whenever they come over to my house, I'm always one that cooks. But yeah, it's definitely one of those things that whenever I tell them I go to NOCA, they're like, oh, what discipline do you go for? And when I say culinary, they're like, what? Like, it's not like the typical answer that they would expect.
And what do you hope to do in your culinary career?
So I am more interested in the medical side. So Tulane's Food Medicine Center has like this huge summer program that they're inviting college students from Johnson and Wales to come down and volunteer for. So I'm going to try to get involved with that.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
It's a
pleasure to meet you.
You too.
I'm Sierra Torres. I'm a level 4 student in the Culinary Arts program at NOCA.
Nice to meet you too. What has your experience been like here over the 4 years?
Oh, wow, that's such a big question.
Well, but I imagine you came in with expectations.
Oh, I was so scared when I first started. I was like, oh, I have to be some master chef who knows all. I like spent several weeks before trying to learn the like French sauces and everything because I was so scared. And I was a vegetarian for 7 years before I came to NOCA. The first meat I had cooked to practice, my family told me it tastes like dog food, and I was just like so defeated. But now I'm not a vegetarian, but I mean, just like over the past 4 years, I've learned so much about food, and it's just like been something that's not just like you eat or that I come to class for every day. Like I'm totally consumed by it. Between like going and interning at the gardens, I work at a restaurant patois. I spend 3 hours here every day. I go home and cook dinner for my family all the time. I mean, it's just like something I do all the time. I think about all the time. I want to share with my friends and family all the time. So this is definitely, I don't think I would have had that without coming to NOCA.
You're in the second half now of your final year, your fourth level here. What's coming in your future, Sierra?
So I'm really interested in sustainability, specifically with food and farming. I love working as a line cook. I love this industry so much, but I really want to do something that's bigger than myself and bigger than just, you know, spending time in a kitchen. So I applied to several colleges to study sustainable food and farming. I got accepted into UMass Amherst, Oregon State University, LSU, and then Green Mountain College in Vermont. I definitely like UMass Amherst a lot. I went and visited there and met with the professor, and he really wanted me to go and very supportive, and that's something that I would really love to work with him. We'll see though.
It's an honor to meet you, and thanks so much for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Dana Tuohy, Department Chair of the NOCAS Culinary Arts Program, training the next generation of New Orleans great chefs.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear the pitter-patter?
Next, we stepped outside and walked a block over to the Press Street Gardens, an urban farm and outdoor learning laboratory on the edge of NOCAS campus. We were met at the garden gate by Marguerite Green, manager of the beautiful urban farm. Margie, the last time that we met, we were at an urban garden site
yes.
that had to do with the Habitat for Humanity. And at that time, you didn't have your own garden at NOCA.
Right, so those sites, which we still love a lot, and we actually were at earlier today, were through the Habitat for Humanity Urban Garden Program. And those were sites that we were able to use in the meantime while this property was under construction and in permitting. So we were able to continue to grow and have a program, but they weren't on our, you know, on-campus official site.
Now, let's talk capacity. So when you are farming here on the NOCA property, how much room do you have to farm and what are you producing?
So on this site, we're actually standing on about a half an acre in and in production that boils down to maybe a little under a quarter of an acre is growing space, actual growing space. So what comes out of this site is a totally diversified mixture of flowers, herbs, and vegetables, as well as some unique kind of commodity crops like luffah that we sell to people to use as their dish sponges and all sorts of products like that, like more medicinal herbs than culinary herbs. But out of this site is where the bulk of our produce comes now because it has the best soil. The urban garden sites that we have through Habitat don't have as great of soil, so we're being able to use those to compost on and build up the soil with the food scraps from our culinary arts department and get that soil to a good workable place.
Explain to me how you and the gardens work with the culinary students themselves.
So our culinary arts students actually come out between 1 to 3 times a week. Some of them who have more personal interest in the gardening aspect of it come out 3 times a week and actually come to the farmers market with us. So they're taking things from seed, from the actual planting of the product, to the market and selling it to consumers. And then we have other students who come out on a biweekly basis and do the weeding, the work, the watering, the fertilizing, and all of that sort of thing. So it's mostly our seniors that come out a lot because they're able to sort of make their own decisions about what they want, what course they want to take by the time they're level fours. And then our levels 1 through 3 come out every other week and do actually do that hands-on labor in the garden.
It's a great experience for them to watch something grow and then get to cook it.
Yeah, it's so cool, especially when they don't realize that they were the ones that planted the seed. And because time moves so differently in a garden, so oftentimes they'll be picking something and I'll remind them that it's the thing that they planted 6 or 7 weeks ago. And that really delights students when they realize, like, oh, wait, this is the actual... These are the radishes that I like thought was just busy work 7 weeks ago or 6 weeks ago. It's cool.
Back when we spoke originally, you all were just producing enough pretty much for the culinary school. You didn't have a lot of other outlets. How has that expanded now?
That's been really fun and wonderful to build on. So we're able to sell to several restaurants in our neighborhood and even out of our neighborhood now. We have sold to Emeril's restaurants. We sell to Sneaky Pickle on a regular basis. We actually sell to St. Rock Market to be, you know, one of the grocers in their space and have produce from our garden go straight to that market and into their CSA box. Last summer, we had our own CSA that was public, so people subscribed and got boxes of produce on a weekly basis. And we also did that with flowers, which was very fun. we are able to use our produce in the culinary arts department still. Obviously, we still have, you know, most of it goes to that. And then also Press Street Station, our sister restaurant, so to speak, our campus restaurant.
It's very cool that you're right here on the train tracks. And somehow that whole train depot feel has carried through. You even have a container that's, what, your office?
Yep. Yeah, so as many people probably know, Press Street is named Press Street because it was Cotton Press Street, because the cotton would come on the trains off the river or onto the river to be processed or packed, and it was just shortened to Press Street when that became a less important part of New Orleans. So one of the really cool things about being on the railroad tracks is that we get to, like, understand the history of the import and export of food that happened so close to us right here. And last summer, one of our very favorite things to grow was, we grew a lot of cotton last summer so that we could kind of, like, see and feel and touch what that actually would have been like to work with. You know, we grow sugarcane, we grow sorghum, and we grow all of the commodity crops that would have come up and down this railroad.
Oh, one of my favorite things, sweet peas.
Oh, yeah, we love them. A lot of people say that they remind them of, like, their grandmothers, or they don't see them growing too much anymore. But as far as the cut flowers that we sell here, we sell out of them right away. People love sweet peas.
And what else do we have growing right now?
Right now, we have a lot of Romanesco cauliflower, which is that cool fractal-patterned green cauliflower that people might just be starting to see at their farmers markets. We have some baby beets right here that we're itching to get out of the ground and get pickled with our culinary arts department. Because it's kind of time to turn over those winter crops. So we'll be harvesting out those baby beets, and this baby arugula, we'll be tilling it under soon to feed the soil. We also have a vining tropical spinach that made it through the winter, and we used it last summer in order to be able to still have salad greens throughout the summer, which are hard to produce. And then we have grapes further down on that trellis, and we have kiwis on the fence, and we have melaton on the fence, and I think that's it for now. And in a couple weeks, we'll start having cucumbers climbing the fence too.
And it's not just plants you're growing. I hear you've got some chickens too.
We sure do. We have five lovely chickens, lovely ladies down at the end of the garden, and they just moved here from another garden site recently, and I think that they feel like this is the lap of luxury. This garden is just like their dream situation.
What's really cool is that you guys are using a chicken tractor.
Yes, we are. You recognized it.
Of course I did. Tell us about the chicken tractor.
So the cool thing about the chicken tractor is that we're able to move it on a daily or a weekly basis, depending on what we see fit. They can stay in a pretty small space, so now they're really protected, but they get fresh grass depending on how often we move the tractor. It's essentially a moving chicken coop. And if we ever want to clear out a row or a bed and we have some free time on our hands to let them clear it out, we can just park this chicken tractor over, say, an old row of lettuce, and they'll eat all of the lettuce and their little bodies will compost it and push it back out into the row to refertilize.
Oh, nothing as hard working as a chicken on a farm.
No, it's not. But they have a good time, I think.
Marguerite Green, manager of the Press Street Gardens. What does it cost today to get a bachelor's degree in culinary arts? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from the Redfish Grill. From dock to pot, Ralph Brennan does seafood better with 9 varieties of fresh fish plucked straight from the Gulf, served each and every day. Lunch, dinner, and private events at 115 Bourbon Street in the French Quarter. Thank you.
Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What does it cost today to get a bachelor's degree in culinary arts? The first year's tuition in most college-level culinary schools runs between $25,000 and $30,000. Your first year at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, the place most consider the creme de la creme of cooking schools, runs over $40,000. So you graduate from the CIA after 4 years with as much as $160,000 in college debt. Any idea what most starting salaries are for young aspiring chefs with degrees? Let's not even go there. Instead, let's take a look at another culinary program that Louisiana should be proud of, that Culinary Institute on the Bayou at Nicholls State University in Thibodaux. If you're an in-state student, your first year's tuition is about $8,000. Even out-of-state tuition is a bargain at less than $18,000. I'm Poppy Tooker, and both the New Orleans Center for the Creative Arts and the John Foles Culinary Institute at Nicholls State University is something we should all be proud of. For the final stop on our tour of NOCA's culinary program, we return to where we started, the Press Street Station, an actual working restaurant that's open to the general public. There, we sat down with Chef James Cullen to learn how the restaurant furthers the students' hands-on education, as well as what you can expect to find on their menu.
What we try to do here is we try to do upscale bistro dining in kind of a very casual environment using locally sourced ingredients. NOCA students, when they're available to us in the culinary arts program, and a lot of scratch cooking. We're a big scratch cooking house. You know, almost everything we do is made in-house, from breads to when we run our Reuben, we make our sauerkraut and our corned beef in-house. So it's providing people with things that they've probably had before, but with a little bit more craft to it.
When you say locally sourced, you're really not kidding, because you're right here next to the garden.
Well, it's an ongoing relationship, because one of the benefits and challenges of having a garden is the production schedules. Sometimes things are available, sometimes they're not available, and sometimes they're available in bountiful quantities, and sometimes, you know, it's a garden. So what we try to do is feature whatever they have that's most bountiful at the time as like a seasonal vegetable, and to use in a dish or two.
Would you elaborate a little bit on your relationship with NOCA? It's very interesting, because in essence, the Press Street Station is sort of the public front door to NOCA in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. It's a way to showcase a lot of the different things we do here. Our Sunday brunches, we feature NOCA and Friends of NOCA musicians that play throughout the city. This week we're having the James Martin Trio, and James is a NOCA grad and plays with Glenn David Andrews, a saxophone player, and a really fantastic musician. Calvin Johnson, who's a NOCA alum, is going to be a resident in April. It's almost interdisciplinary, if you will. So we employ students in the various programs, our servers here. We use some in the kitchen, some alum in the kitchen. We bring in musicians and alum to play our brunches. So you kind of get a feel for a lot of the different creative disciplines that are at NOCA. And really, it's a special place. I mean, the students are incredibly talented. I haven't seen a collection of more talented kids in one place, honestly. They have a high skill level, closer to like a first-year culinary student, and probably even better than that, you know. But they're good, and their attitudes are good, and they want to do it, and that's the biggest thing. Most people, there's some people in the service industry that want to be there, and there's some that have to be there, you know, and they have the desire to be there, which makes your job a lot easier, because they're already more receptive to what it is you're trying to show them and teach them, and that makes it a lot more pleasant from my end.
I think people would be amazed to learn that it's a real work environment and that you don't ever feel like you're babysitting.
Oh, no, it's a real work environment. I demand that it be a real work environment. The chefs that taught me would be embarrassed if I did anything less. I was fortunate to work for some very good chefs in my career. The majority of it was spent in New York City. It was a demanding place. I ask a lot of them because I ask a lot of myself, and you know that's how they're going to become better. And you push yourself. You don't push yourself for other people. You push yourself to make yourself better, and that's what I try to instill in them. You know, come early if you have questions. Ask them. I don't care how busy we are. I'll stop. I'll stop in the middle of a 200-person rush and answer that question, because if you're going to take the time and the interest to show me that you have a genuine concern or question about something, we're going to figure it out. So one of the things I want to instill in them is when you do this job and you conduct yourself in a certain way and you have a certain skill set, you can work anywhere and you can work in any kitchen and do what you want, and you have a lot of freedom in the business.
So James, if you spent a great deal of time working in the first part of your career in New York, how did you end up down here anyway?
But you know, I basically burned all my bridges in New York. No, that's not entirely untrue either. But my wife is from here. So, like I said, I was fortunate. I worked at some really good places. I worked for some really good people. But it's a lot. There are no snow days in the restaurant industry in New York. You're busy almost every single night of the week. And, you know, I wanted a change of pace. I wanted to try something different and see. You know, we started coming down here more and more, and I'm like, well, let's give it a shot. Why not? You know, and it's really been a good fit for me, so I'm very happy to be here.
You mentioned that 200-person rush. I know that this has become a very popular eating spot. Tell us about your customers and how you see them react and interact with your student employees.
They love the students. More than anything, I think that's one of the first questions. They do this. They come in, they look at the rafters and the skylights and the space, and they're like, oh, what a great space. You know. And then the first thing they do is ask, oh, are you a student here? You know. And some are and some aren't. We're not fully staffed by students, but we have mostly on the weekends, we're almost exclusively staffed by students. That's when they're off. The response has been overwhelmingly positive, like line out the door on Sundays, which is a good problem to have. But, yeah, they love... The customers love the kids. They do, very much so.
James, thanks for having us in to talk with us on Louisiana Eats.
Well, thanks for spending a little bit of time with us this afternoon.
Let's eat.
All right.
Chef James Cullen, executive chef of Press Street Station. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week when we speak with Cheryl Batchelder, president and CEO of Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, the woman whose vision achieved an amazing turnaround in the company's success.
I have a friend who's a choir director. His name is Eric. And Eric said, think about this. I'm in charge of picking the music, preparing the choir, rehearsing them to perfection. But when we sing in front of that audience, I'm the least important person in the room. And I think that says it all. A great leader should be invisible.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, by the Palace Cafe, home of the crabmeat cheesecake and white chocolate bread pudding in the historic Whirline Music Building on Canal Street, and by Toujek's Restaurant, home of America's oldest stand-up bar, now celebrating 160 years on Decatur Street.
Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner and Sarah Holtz. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eat studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.